Roundtable Podcasts, underwritten by Proctors, the Capital Region's premier performing arts center featuring the best in entertainment from Broadway and around the globe. Proctors.org.
On April 25th of this year, TMZ Sports released a recording of a conversation between Los Angeles Clippers owner Donald Sterling and a female friend. In the recording from September 2013, a man confirmed to be Sterling was irritated over a photo the woman had posted on Instagram, in which she posed with Basketball Hall of Fame player Magic Johnson. Here's a snippet from that conversation.
That's your culture, and I'm respectful.
Why do you have to disrespect them? Those that are...
Who am I disrespecting?
The world before you.
Why am I disrespecting them?
What, by walking, you perceive as either a Latina or a white girl. Why should you be walking publicly with black people? Why? Is there a benefit to you?
Is it a benefit to me? Does it matter if they're white or blue or yellow?
I guess that you don't know that. Maybe you're stupid. Maybe you don't know what people think of you. It does matter, yeah. It matters.
Donald Sterling was banned from the NBA for a wife and fined $2.5 million by the league after the recordings were made public. That incident played in the background over the past 2 months as we talk with scholars and citizens for this project. It came up time and time again, so much so we wanted to explore the role civility has with this nation's sports culture. The NYU Sports and Society Program, headed by New York University professor Arthur Miller, issued a white paper earlier this year examining the phenomenon of bullying and other intolerant behavior in sports and proposing a comprehensive range of initiatives focused on youth athletics to combat them. Miller, one of the nation's most distinguished law professors, says there are many parallels between civility and sports.
For better or for worse, sports has become a major system of our society. Just pick up any newspaper, just turn on the television set, and you see the media attention to sports. It impregnates our daily lives, our children, school. It generates hundreds of fascinating issues: concussions, the health of our youth, land use planning, tax policy. Sports are now global. NBA is going to be playing in China soon. The NFL is already playing in London. It's just grown from games when I was a kid to big business and enormous social issues. We've had Mr. Sterling of the L.A. Clippers giving us lessons on racism. So you see, it's really a mirror of society. What goes on in sports is a mirror of society. It's why Mandela said sports is the universal language. No matter where you go in the world, you can talk to somebody about soccer.
So when it comes to trying to come to a level of civility, the problems we see in sports, I assume, mirror the problems that we see in our culture, the problems that we see in politics. Are the root problems the same?
The root problems are the same. They deal with dignity and respect in the workplace, in the halls of Congress, here on my faculty at the NYU School of Law. I don't have to accept your religion or your politics, but I have to respect you as a fully functioning human being that, in that sense, deserves the respect and dignity I feel I'm entitled to. And when those kids get together in Little League or in Pop Warner, and then in middle school, and then in high school, and then in college, and a few into the pros, unless they have been inculcated at the earliest time with respect for their fellow player, respect for the opposing player, respect for the coach, respect for their schoolmates, not to think of themselves as the hero, the role model, the superhuman, the person who can act beyond the rules because they're the quarterback, unless we get to those athletes early, they are never going to be fully functioning people in our society. They will be inverse role models.
We hear this a lot about the culture, the sports culture, the bullying culture, the culture of the locker room. And I'm curious as to how that is different than the incivility that we have outside of the locker room that we have. So, yes, you have those young men and women who are playing those sports, but even the kid who isn't and is in computer camp is still dealing with many of the same issues. So how is the culture different?
It's not that it's different. It may be accentuated. If you take a physical contact sport, like football's always the paradigm. It's just at a heightened level because of the physicality of the game. Also, in sports, you very often get, from a socio-demographic point of view, the athletes drawn from certain subcultures. There's no mystery about the fact that basketball is now a black sport. I learned yesterday at a meeting with one of the top executives at the NFL that well over 80% of all NFL players come from a very small number of counties in this country, the paradigm being Detroit. That means that there's a mismatch in the locker room between people from Detroit and people from Nebraska. There's a mismatch in the locker room between the fundamentalist Christian and the Christian. There's a mismatch in the locker room in terms of upbringing between a kid who comes out of a black high school and a kid who comes out of a white high school, just as a kid who comes out of the farm belt and a kid who comes out of New York City.
Going back to what you were talking about earlier, of the, you don't have to accept it, but you do have to respect the individual. So how do we get to that point? How do we cultivate that in our culture and in our society?
I hate to say it because people always make fun of us academics. It is a matter of education that starts in the family. Sadly, we have many non-functional families in this country, and in that environment, it's got to come from the schools. What's happening in sports, and it's fascinating that high schools to colleges to the pros all are focused right now, and I hope we'll be focused on this for years to come, on somehow changing the culture of the locker room or the culture of the sports environment in terms of breeding dignity and respect one for the other, to avoid this thing we call bullying or harassment or hazing. That fixation, that commitment to change that culture has got to extend beyond sports. Ironically, sports, because of some of the crazy things that happen in sports, may actually become a leader in culture shift. Because we've got to take the focus on avoidance of disrespect that seems to be generating in locker rooms now over to schoolrooms, over to boardrooms, over to classrooms. And it's wishful thinking, as us academics are guilty of. It's a slow, slow process. Because you're changing behavior patterns that have set into the society for years and years and years. But curiously, going back to something we started our conversation with, because sports are now front and center, sports can be a leader here. Sports can be its own form of role modeling to take civility from the locker room to these other environments. Or I'm just guilty of wishful thinking.
The commissioner of the NBA bans an owner for a wife, and many thought that the ultimate decision would be less than that. And I'm curious as to your point of bringing it to the boardroom and to our culture and society. Imagine the pressure on the commissioner, on the league, to send that right message of what is the right message.
Well, I think that is a perfect illustration of how, on occasion, sports can export good citizenship from the sports environment to other environments. Suddenly, there's a national focus on what one NBA owner said about the races. The commissioner did what he had to do. Let's face facts. That commissioner was under enormous pressure. Pressure from the players, pressure from some of the other owners, pressure from the sponsors, special pressures from the media. He had to do what he had to do. The fact that he did it is to his credit. I take nothing away from him. It's a remarkable baptism for a new commissioner, Mr. Silver. But there have got to be people out there in the corporate world or in the educational world who must be saying today, I surely have to make it clear to everyone in my organization there can be no comparable conduct. It's the old adage, never say anything you wouldn't want to see reprinted on the first page of the New York Times. And sadly, in a way, because I happen personally to be a buff on the right to privacy, we now know everything we do in life is recorded in one fashion or another. And it, in combination, the technology and the object lesson of what happened with the LA Clippers, it's going to have legs. It's going to have reciprocal effects in other organizations around the country.
I'm curious as to how we then take that to not muting our feelings and not knowing when to say it and when you're okay to say it privately, and actually changing the thought process.
Context is everything. We know the N-word. If you think of the N-word, you realize that it is part of the upbringing of many, many African Americans to use the N-word with each other. It signals something one to the other. It's almost a kinship word one to the other. And I was talking to someone literally an hour ago who's in sports psychology who says, you know, that N-word is probably okay to a husband and wife, a biracial couple. Inside that marriage, that word is okay. But outside those contexts, everyone has to understand that they must adjust their thought process, their speech process, so that they are not using language that coming from their mouths is disrespectful and can be characterized as racist. Now, whether we know it or not, we have made those adjustments over time. Now, again, using the sports image, 1953, the year before, I think it's the year before Jackie Robinson breaks into baseball. You would hear those words in stadiums. You would hear those words on the street. Jackie Robinson breaks in. The color line is broken. Black are now fully integrated into just about all of our sports. And the rest of us wouldn't think of going to Yankee Stadium and using words like that. At least 99.9% of us would not. We've adjusted our speech patterns. If I can think autobiographically, over the years, I've completely acclimated and developed sensitivities with regard to gender, to race, to ethnicity, to sexual preference. Yes, over time, we do adjust our thought processes, our speech patterns. The great fear, and it's again an academic's fear, is that it has free speech implications. The NFL is discussing, if you use the N-word, is that a 15-yard penalty? Now, come on. That's not going to fly. There's a speech issue there. And you could just sort of visualize one 300-pound offensive lineman facing a 300-pound defensive lineman. They're both African-American. You're going to tell them you can't use the N-word? You can't try to intimidate your opponent? You can't haze? You can't build teamship and fellowship by using speech patterns that are perfectly acceptable within that environment, and at the same time not use those speech patterns outside that environment?
Professor Arthur Miller, thank you very much for the time you spent with us. I greatly appreciate it.
Oh, it's been a delight. Thank you, Joe.
New York University Professor Arthur Miller. Will hear from Harvard Law School Professor Randall Kennedy next. Agreeing to disagree, civility in public discourse is funded in part by Mass Humanities, state-based affiliate of the National Endowment for the Humanities, masshumanities.org.